The Letter of Mothetes to Diognetus. Chapter 1. Occasion of the Epistle. Since I see you, most excellent Diognetus, exceedingly desirous to learn the mode of worshipping God prevalent among the Christians, and inquiring very carefully and earnestly concerning them, what God they trust in, and what form of religion they observe, so as all to look down upon the world itself, and despise death, while they neither esteem those to be gods that are reckoned such by the Greeks, nor hold to the superstition of the Jews. And what is the affection which they cherish among themselves? And finally, why this new kind of practice of piety has only now entered into the world, and not long ago? I cordially welcome this your desire, and I implore God, who enables us both to speak and to hear, to grant to me to speak so that above all I may hear you have been edified, and to you so to hear that I who speak may have no cause of regret for having done so. Chapter 2. The Vanity of Idols. Come, then, after you have freed yourself from all prejudices possessing your mind, and laid aside what you have been accustomed to as something apt to deceive you, and being made as if from the beginning a new man, inasmuch, according to your own confession, you are to be the hearer of a new teaching, come and contemplate, not with your eyes only, but with your understanding, the substance and form of those whom you declare and deem to be gods. Is not one of them a stone, similar to that on which we tread? Is not a second brass, in no way superior to those vessels which are constructed for our common use? Is not a third wood, and that already rotten? Is not a fourth silver, which needs a man to watch it, lest it be stolen? Is not a fifth iron, consumed by rust? Is not a sixth earthenware, in no degree more valuable than that which is formed for the humblest purposes? Are not all these of corruptible matter? Are they not fabricated by the means of iron and fire? Did not the sculptor fashion one of them, the brazier a second, the silversmith a third, and the potter a fourth? Was not every one of them, before they were formed by the arts of these workmen, into the shape of these, each in its own way subject to change? Would not those things which are now vessels, formed of the same materials, become like to such, if they met with the same artificers? Might not all these, which are now worshipped by you, again be made by men, vessels similar to others? Are they not all deaf? Are they not blind? Are they not without life? Are they not destitute of feeling? Are they not incapable of motion? Are they not all liable to rot? Are they not all corruptible? These things you call gods, these you serve, these you worship, and you become altogether like them. For this reason, you hate the Christians, because they do not deem these to be gods. But do not you yourselves, who now think and suppose such to be gods, cast much more contempt upon them than they do? Do you not much more mock and insult them, when you worship those that are made of stone and earthenware, without appointing any persons to guard them, but those made of silver and gold you shut up by night, and appoint watchers to look after them by day, lest they be stolen? And by those gifts which you mean to present to them, Do you not, if they are possessed of sense, rather punish them? But if, on the other hand, they are destitute of sense, you convict them of this fact, while you worship them with blood and the smoke of sacrifices. Let any one of you suffer such indignities. Let any one of you endure to have such things done to himself. But not a single human being will, unless compelled to it, endure such treatment, since he is endowed with sense and reason. A stone, however, readily bears it, seeing it is insensible. Certainly you do not show that he is possessed of sense. And as to the fact that Christians are not accustomed to serve such gods, I might easily find many other things to say, but even if what has been said does not seem to anyone sufficient, I deem it idle to say anything further. Chapter 3. Superstitions of the Jews. And next I imagine that you are most desirous of hearing something on this point, that the Christians do not observe the same forms of divine worship as do the Jews. The Jews, then, if they abstain from the kind of service above described, and do deem it proper to worship one God, as being Lord of all, are right. But if they offer him worship in the way which we have described, they greatly err. For while the Gentiles, by offering such things to those that are destitute of sense and hearing, furnish an example of madness, they, on the other hand, by thinking to offer these things to God, as if he needed them, might justly reckon it rather an act of folly than of divine worship. For he that made heaven and earth, and all that is therein, and gives to us all the things of which we stand in need, certainly requires none of those things which he himself bestows on such as think of furnishing them to him. But those who imagine that by means of blood and the smoke of sacrifices and burnt offerings they offer sacrifices acceptable to him, and that by such honors they show him respect, these, by supposing that they can give anything to him who stands in need of nothing, appear to me in no respect to differ from those who studiously confer the same honor on things destitute of sense, and which therefore are unable to enjoy such honors. Chapter 4. The Other Observances of the Jews. But as to their scrupulosity concerning meats, and their superstition as respects the Sabbaths, and their boasting about circumcision, and their fancies about fasting and the new moons, which are utterly ridiculous and unworthy of notice, I do not think that you require to learn anything from me. For to accept some of those things which have been formed by God for the use of men as properly formed, and to reject others as useless and redundant, how can this be lawful? And to speak falsely of God, as if he forbade us to do what is good on the Sabbath days, how is this not impious? And to glory in the circumcision of the flesh as a proof of election, and as if, on account of it, they were specially beloved by God, how is it not a subject of ridicule? And as to their observing months and days, as if waiting upon the stars and the moon, and their distributing according to their own tendencies the appointments of God and the vicissitudes of the seasons, some for festivities and others for mourning, who would deem this a part of divine worship, and not much rather a manifestation of folly? I suppose, then, you are sufficiently convinced that the Christians properly abstain from the vanity and error common to both Jews and Gentiles, and from the busybody spirit and vain boasting of the Jews. But you must not hope to learn the mystery of their peculiar mode of worshipping God from any mortal. End of part 1.